let's head over to Happy Hawaii and even happier Honolulu, which Dick Allgaier told us years ago was starting to show signs of being brought down to second world status by the globalist elite, who were flooding it with people who normally wouldn't be found in Honolulu. How's the general populace there, Richard?
Well, I wouldn't say they're flooding it with outsiders. They're shipping a few over. You see some people that you can tell are not from Hawaii and the homeless, but it's difficult to get them here. They've got to put them on an airplane.
Nice.
So, did you hear about the people coming in on the Hawaiian flight yesterday that hit an air pocket and a bunch of people got seriously hurt.
It was like not broadcast in, they were thrown out of their seats.
Yeah. 11 seriously hurt, 36 hospitalized. It was a bad one. I'm glad I wasn't working that day. That would have been an all hands on deck day. They had lines of ambulances at the airport. Boy, I listened to that last hour with Erica.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's not easy. How do you do that all the time and not just get
depressed?
Despair.
Drugs. I don't know how I do it. It has to be done. There's really no truth in journalism anymore, as you well know. It's all lies.
Oh, it is really bad.
Horrible.
It's gotten just right in your face.
Those of you who don't know,
reports? I didn't.
Social media sites. Erica monitors them.
Oh, she monitors
continually.
Them. People go write their experiences.
Yeah. Dick was a news anchorman, news reporter for 38 years with the number one station in Honolulu. He's a television journalist when there used to be television journalists, not just readers and pretty boys and pretty girls and some of those others. So you figure it out. So he knows. The news is it's all crap now. It's just crap.
Local news is different than national news because local news, the Hawaiian Airlines flight hits turbulence.
Well, you get to see bad traffic accidents and fires and homeless stories.
But you know what, Jeff? And I just did a YouTube story about this. One thing I do miss about news in Hawaii, and I haven't been involved with it, especially since COVID, and that is good news stories. And there are good news stories in local news, and especially Hawaii. People who excel at something, people who are being honored or rewarded, some nice charitable or social event, the team does well. New company is
yeah. Well, we
well.
I what mean, do we call those in the biz? We call those feature stories.
Yeah, but I worked Sunday, so there were quite a few of those. So last week there's a couple at the beach that I've been swimming with for 10 years, and I meet them, in passing, say hello. It's a Hawaiian guy and his Hawaiian wife, and he gives me ulu, which is the Hawaiian word for breadfruit. Have you ever had breadfruit?
I have once or twice. I couldn't remember when, though. I have
really
eaten it.
I really like it. It's not a fruit. It's not. It just has a. It's like really good human food. It's a mild taste and a nice
How
texture.
Is it prepared?
We steam it. You can also grill it, but my wife steams it for me, and I'll eat it. Piece of that in the morning, and it's really good nutrition. Anyway, this guy gives me ulu. So he said, I hope you can come to our party. My wife and I are renewing our vows. We've married 50 years. So last Saturday, I went with my friend Sonny to this. They had a gathering, and it was barefoot. They put in the aloha attire, like no nice clothes. You can't wear shoes. So everybody takes their slippers off and they're barefoot inside, and they served Hawaiian food. And these people, they had, it was Hawaiian music and...
Was this in a home?
No, it was in a facility, like a recreational type facility.
Got it.
And a place that used to be a bank, and now it's been cleaned out, and it's a mm-hmm. big area, and I guess you can rent it and whole thing. So they got up and looked eye to eye and put their foreheads together and did a little Hawaiian ceremony, and it was really beautiful. They had a wonderful family, and they've been married 50 years, and they just said, "Hey, I still love you, and we renew our vows." And it was just nice to be around people in a happy atmosphere. Probably picked
How
up a lot.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Don't do that anymore. You might get used to it. And remember.
Yeah.
And we don't want people remembering.
Oh, man.
And you look
is.
At these Gen, the Gen
the
Zers.
It is the age of forgetting. It is the
Come
age
on.
Of
Gen,
forgetting.
Yeah, well, the Gen Z, how can they forget when they never experienced? They can't. They don't know what the hell we're talking about. They have no idea. You yeah. cannot forget something that you haven't experienced or heard. I guess you can forget that, too. But no, these poor Gen Z kids, no chance, no.
Oh, and at the rate it's going, I mean, our society, our world, our just the whole way things are run are so much different than they were 4 years ago.
It didn't take them long, did it?
Astonishing, no.
Well, when the plug is pulled, the machine stops working.
I had a friend.
This is falling down.
I had a friend who came to Hawaii the same year I did in 1985, and he was in Denver, Colorado, and a friend said, "Hey, I have a ticket to Hawaii. I can't use it. Do you want it? I'll give it to you." He said, "Sure." So he gave him the ticket, which was a paper ticket, and he went to the airport, and he used the ticket to get on the plane and come. They didn't check his ID. Five yeah. times. Your family could walk out to the gate with you. They didn't pat you down. They didn't put you through an X-ray machine. And
come on,
yeah.
Richard. No, that's science fiction. Never happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, I remember flying when I flew.
Yeah. You haven't flown for what? Since 9/11? Have you flown since 9/11?
25 years. Oh, no, not since 9/11.
You don't know. Oh, no. I would love to take, I would buy you'd never make it to the plane. you would turn and run. You can't believe what it's like at an airport now.
Oh, like, no, I couldn't. I wouldn't.
You get there you can't park anywhere near. When we used to cover news stories, we would just go pull up to the, there was a pull on the road and there was a little green zone. We'd park the news car there and just go in and do our thing. No, not anymore. But you walk toward the terminal and there is a line that snakes out the door and you have to wait in this line and you go through an area where there's a dog that sniffs you and then you go to another line where you do a self kiosk where you got to type in your ticket number and your name and it prints out your luggage tags and you put them on. Then you get in another line to drop off your baggage. Then you get in a long line where they have TSA agents. You have to have your ticket and you have to have your ID and they check that like three times and you wait in this long, long line. Then you get in a line where they have the scanners and you have to take your belt off and your shoes and take all your electronic equipment out. And they paw through. It's just, you wouldn't. And the airplane seats, Jeff, have gotten so small. Even someone our size, your hips don't fit.
Or you sit in someone's lap then.
Oh, it's just.
Extra large seat belts. No, that's not fun and traveling. Come on. That's an ordeal.
Yeah.
That's horrible. It's designed to make us feel like we're nothing much more than sheep. Yeah. And they done
well,
it.
Well, yeah, we are.
They done
hey,
did it.
How's the weather up there? Is it cold? Is it snowy?
Cold. Cold.
It's cold. Oh, I don't want to complain here, but yeah, it's pretty. We get these weird storms once in a while, and we had one today. I went to the beach with every good intention of swimming, and when I got there, I got out of my car, and it was just this, like, 40-mile-an-hour wind off the ocean, just wow, 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 and cold for Hawaii, but...
What, 81, 82?
Oh, it was, well, let me see what it is now. 71 degrees.
Oh, that is cold.
Yeah, it was down maybe 68 with the wind chill. It was, I wanted a sweatshirt, but I didn't get in the water. The water was really rough. My friend on the island of Lanai, which is two islands down the chain, he said he had marble-sized hail today. Big hailstorm. Whap, whap, whap,
really?
Whap. Yeah, that's quite unusual. But the wind was coming from the south. Usually our storms come from the northeast, but this was coming from the south-southwest.
You're going to be frozen over there. You'll have a white Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not quite. We have a green Christmas. Hey, we talked earlier about what we were going to talk about. I talked to you about 4 hours ago and we touched base. And I did a remote viewing and I thought, I got to describe this. Let's talk a little about remote viewing and I'll try to describe the flavor of how it works for me. Because I'm working on the holy grail of remote viewing, which is experiential, full visual, like full color, looking at a movie, you are there. And that's difficult, and it doesn't happen every time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll ask you this. Do you dream in color? Do you have a vivid color dream ever?
I honestly do dream in color. I wouldn't call it Technicolor Cinerama, but I see things in most dreams as they really are. It's not like it's black and white. Yeah. No.
Okay, so my question would be, your eyes are closed. There's nothing hitting your optic nerve, no photons hitting your optic nerve.
What's bugging the rods and cones?
Yeah. Right? How does that visual experience, what causes that? So that's the argument I would use when some remote viewers claim, you can't really see something. I mean, that's not possible.
Oh, come on.
You're
not seeing anything. It's a mental process. It's bioelectrical, chemical, something we don't really understand fully, how dreams, I think, are actually brought about. What controls them? It's kind of a no man's land. I don't know what it is. As a remote viewer, do you think sometimes when you're dreaming, you're picking things up from?
Yes.
From, okay. Well, you're on. You got it.
Edward Reardon records his dreams and draws them out and puts them on the record. Sometimes. It turns out to be target data or future predictions. So mine are more lucid dreams. We just worked the flight 370, the Malaysia Airlines.
Yeah.
Did I talk about that last time?
I can't remember. We didn't get there, I don't think.
Oh, okay. I was working this target, and I was... Remote viewing is really difficult because you start out in an alert state with a pen and paper, and you are just getting mental impressions. I close my eyes and look and try to get a real brief visual, but I was working this target, and I just wasn't getting a lot. I'd done a couple hours, and I knew it was due, and they actually gave us an extra week to work on it. So I'm, all I know is G1L4-C7R8, you know, okay, I don't know what this is. I'm not really getting it. So I had some pain early in the morning in my foot, and I was in and out of sleep. It was really annoying because I'd have the pain, I'd wake up, and then I'd fall back asleep, and I'd get the pain and wake up. So I thought, well, I'll try to remote view this target. So I put the target ID in front of me. You know, I concentrated on that. And I saw the plane plummeting through the dark sky. I'm like, whoa, my God. You know, and then I fell asleep again. And then I saw it explode. And I thought, wow. And then I went back to sleep. I kept seeing it over and over again. So at 4 a.m., I got up and I started drawing it. I drew it, and that was the target. It was a really good one. So anyway, the one I was doing today was, I was given four numbers, and I'm not going to give them out because if I gave out the numbers, people could muck with that. They could contaminate. So say the numbers are like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So I'm sitting there and going, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And I kind of circumvented the paper route. I tried to just go there. So I'm laying on my bed under my EMF tent, you know, the little gauze silver.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I have a red lamp on. And I'm listening to theta tones, and I'm going 1, 2, 3, 4-5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then I realized that I had kind of fallen asleep. Where am I? And then I go, oh, I'm remote viewing. So I'm one half asleep. I was just up out of asleep. And I said, 1, 2, 3, 4-5, 6, 7, 8, and I saw this splotch of color, and I go, oh, here it comes. And I just relax into it, kind of sink my brain to it, and it turned into this landscape, and I could see the land. I saw little people, like I'm way up, I'm like 100 feet in the air, and I'm looking down, and there's people walking around, and I can't tell too much about it because it's other people are working it, but it's land and it's people, and there's brown spots on the land. And what happens to me is I have a conscious cognition of that. It's like when you're remote viewing, it's really hard to maintain a duplicity of awareness. Like I'm laying on my bed, but my brain, 51% of it is at this target, and I don't know what it is, but I go, oh, there's land. I'm supposed to be seeing this. And I go, there it is. And I can just kind of adjust it a little bit mentally so it comes a little broad, you know, it fills my field of vision instead of, it's kind of tunnel vision. It starts tunnel vision and then it grows. And then after about 10 or 15 seconds, and I always do this, and I'm trying to talk to my teacher, Glenn, about how to not do that, is I realize, oh, there it is. I'm seeing it. I've got to see it. And that conscious realization is, I lose it. I go, ah. You know, I was just asking him yesterday, I said, how do you hold it? Because he can hold it for like long minutes and minutes and walk around and move around. And he said, well, Dick, if you're a shark and you're chasing a fish, you're not thinking, oh, I'm chasing the fish. You're just thinking about, I'm going to eat, you know, food. And he goes, you just got to be predatory on it and just go experience it. Anyway, there's a really interesting target that I'm working, and I got like 40 seconds of experiential visuals in an hour. So it's a lot of work. It's like I get it, and I go, oh, and I lose it, and I grab a colored pencil, and I draw, sketch, and write my impression. And then I have to go back, so I have to put the pencil down, and then I got to put the tones back.
Hold on. How is it to semi-disengage, write what you're writing, draw what you're drawing, and then get back to that target? How do you do
well,
is that?
I have to address the target ID again, and I have to, like, I can't just make it happen. I have to slow my consciousness down. So I managed to get, like, 4 swipes at it today in an hour of 10 seconds each. And you know what it looks like to me? It has the quality of, you know those old, you and I pass these back and forth, those old colorized films like Los Angeles in the 1940s or San Francisco in 1916. And the people are walking and the trolley car's going and a truck goes by and a horse and carriage and they colorize them. The visuals that I get on remote viewing on a good day are, they kind of have that colorized or 16 millimeter film quality
Got it.
To them.
Yeah.
And Glenn told me that it's because the light is old, because that's light that was...
For our listeners, remote viewers, actually, their consciousness goes back to, let's say it's something in the past, it'll go back to those days, and the light has changed. It's, in other words, you're looking through time, and the light has changed, I guess, is what Glenn is saying.
Okay, yeah. Well, here's one for you. The one I was working at today, the last pass, my last dive into target, I probably, I maybe had 30 seconds of good visuals, like I see it, and then it kind of flickers out, and then I see it, it flickers. And what happened to me on a few cycles of that was the land changed. I think what I'm looking at is a site that they want to know what was at this site, like an archaeological thing. And I saw lines on the land, and then in remote viewing, sometimes you can see through, like I could see underground. So I saw the land changing, like, it used to have a few copses of trees over here, and then now I'm looking at a time where there aren't trees, and it's rocky and dry grass. And then I see it another time where there's more. It's going to be interesting to get feedback, because I think I was seeing this land through cycles of time. Remote viewing is the coolest damn thing. When it works, it's just astounding. But it's a lot of work. You can't just turn it on and be omniscient. It's like looking through a little, a telescope, or I liken it to the tube that your paper towels come on and go in a movie theater and look at that for 5 seconds, and go, what's the movie about? But anyway, I'll let you know. I'm pretty good at times. Glenn taught me well.
And for any of you who are interested in seeing how it works and seeing the drawings that viewers pull out of their sessions, go look on the left-hand side of the page and look for Dick Allgaier and look at some of his sessions. You'll see a lot of them there. Hits. I'll do these in advance, and they're stunning. Self-explanatory. You'll get it.
What's really cool, Jeff, is we had not been actively teaching Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild methodology for a few years. We kind of, the HRVG people were going on to, they kind of went from remote viewing into advanced wizardry school, like, okay, let's see if we can do magical stuff with this. And they weren't teaching so much. And crypto viewing got the top HRVG trainer, besides Glenn and me, this lady named Sita, who's been very experienced trainer, very good at it. And she taught a new class that started October of 2021. So they've been going a year and 2 months. And they're getting good. We've graduated, like, about 20, 25 of them out, and they're now in the advanced instruction, and they're doing some remarkable work. So we're about to unleash a whole bunch of new viewers into the world that are real good, and we'll hear some stuff from them. We're thinking of mischief that we can get them involved with.
Well, let's get them involved with this program. We'll give them credit. Bring their drawings and, they can describe it,
too. Yeah, think of some good targets. Like, what would you like to have a remote viewer?
Absolutely.
I got a letter. My wife has me go through the mail. She goes, is this important? She's handing me this letter. It says, this is a great name, Forge Trust. P.O. Box 6850, San Mateo, California. Richard Reynolds Allgaier with my address. Dear Forge Trust client, immediate action required. Account ending 8858. Your Forge Trust account ending 8858 has an outstanding fee balance of $305, a portion of which is significantly past due. You've already made arrangements to pay this amount. Thank you. And they say, if this amount remains unpaid, we may liquidate investments in your account to satisfy the past due amount. In the event there are no or insufficient investments in your IRA to cover the outstanding amount, Forge Trust may be forced to resign as custodian of your IRA. Anyway, they send a check today. So, of course, it's a scam. Yeah. But on the other, I was thinking, like, I have a couple of IRAs. You know, I've worked a couple of places, and I rolled over some of it to a self-directed IRA. And did they change the name of that? And I'm going, this really does look kind of official. And so they gave a phone number and everything, and I called it today and recorded it. It's, I don't have my phone. I could play it. But, they actually had a number and said, thank you for calling Forge Trust. New account found. If you have an inquiry, stand by. Your number, there's one customer ahead of you, and then they play music. And they've really got a pretty good scam. I would send this to the FBI, but the FBI is so corrupt.
Don't do that.
Anyway, Forge Trust. I'm going to print out a fake check and send it to him with some coded screw you message in it. But I guess they probably get some older people that would send the $300.
Oh, they do. They do. Yeah. It's a percentage game. They know that certain percentage is going to bite on it, and they're going to send.
Yeah.
There's scams everywhere now. A lot of them originate in Nigeria, by the way. They're pretty easy to see because the language is bad.
A lot of them are in India. They're calling people, and there's a guy that has a YouTube channel called Scammer Payback, and he's it's really well produced. He's a computer hacker. So what he does is you should watch this if you've never seen it on YouTube. It's hilarious. He's a bright young guy, and he has a voice changer, and he has this whole identity of, he makes up some woman's name, like, this is Ivy, and he makes his voice into an old lady's voice, and he has a desktop with, like, recipes and pictures of family and her cats and everything, and he calls these scammers and engages them, and then he reverses, they think that they're getting her, the victim, to share her desktop, but when they make the connection, he reverses it, and he goes and gets in all their files and finds out where they are and deletes their files, and it's quite entertaining. Scammer
got it.
Payback.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the California reparations testimony?
I read the story about the demand that the one Negro was screaming about, that every black
in
California.
There was a bunch of them.
Yeah.
300,000 is not enough. It'll never be enough.
800,000 is what I said.
Yeah, we need 20 metric tons of gold and 30 acres of land.
You know what? How about 5,000 in cash and a free plane ticket back to Africa? If they hate it here that much, free trip home. Give them $5,000. Ghana, the country over there, has begged American blacks to come home. So if they're not happy here, really not happy, they have a place to go.
Well, race relations were pretty good there for a while.
They're getting worse by the minute. I know. It's all being orchestrated, as you know. Yeah, it's the plan.
They are really driving us apart. It's not just race relations.
Permanently.
It's family relations over politics, over the vaccine and the, and financially.
Family is gone. Family's gone.
Yeah.
I have a really good article up there in headlines, everyone. Let me see if I can find it here. Okay. It's not far. It's not terribly far down from the top. It's past the New York Times stories. It's entitled, "Sexual Morality May Be Far More Important Than You Ever Thought. When abandoned, all societies disintegrate. We are in that stage of cultural freefall now. The end is here." You need to read that. I'll send this to you. It's a good one. Makes the guy like 6 volumes of research, and he condensed it down into 1 volume. He made his point throughout history. When cultures and societies abandon sexual morality or restraint or whatever, that is the linchpin that holds it all together, and it starts to disintegrate from that point. And that's what they did in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. Well,
and it's happened.
We were lucky, I assume you are like me, to be able to make love to a woman that you loved without ever having seen pornography.
Oh, absolutely.
You have a normal sexual relationship, and you've never been exposed. Children today they're exposed to pornography.
Porn first. They don't have a chance. They're taken out of the game before they even enter it. Not a chance.
It ruins them.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally ruins them. It's reversed to barnyard animal behavior, and they can never get back out of it.
Yeah.
You can't unsee that garbage. I have seen very little of it. I really turn away if I accidentally come across any, or somebody has years and years gone by said, "Hey, look at this." No, I don't. I don't. I don't want to see. I don't want to see things that are not good for me, because I know that seeing goes in very deeply and it doesn't go away.
Yeah, it was special to fall in love with those girls that were really feminine in the 70s. 60s
they were
and
sweethearts.
70s.
Yeah.
Girls in 1973. Oh, man. They just angels. They were lean and thin and feminine.
There were no fatties
beautiful.
Then. You got it.
Yeah.
Very
and
few.
No tattoos.
No. Oh, when I see a tattoo, I just say, self-mutilation. I suppose, man, now they like that. Oh, let's see your ink.
Oh.
Well, maybe.
To me, a woman is, this will sound very sexist, but if a woman is like a 10, she has a tattoo, she's a 7. If she's a 7 and she has a tattoo, she's a 3. I mean, it I probably angered.
Well, as you see, the sad thing is, though, the people, millennials, Gen X, is it whatever, they've accepted that as being okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Show me a pro athlete, and what's kind of amusing is the black athletes, who, if they have particularly dark skin, They'll get tattooed anyway. Never mind, you can't see it. It looks
doesn't
like
really work too well.
A big blue smudge. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, tattoos. Victor Bout. If you get a chance, listen to that. That's the so-called Merchant. When I heard Victor Bout, that's when I realized. Well, I've realized it long before that, but it just reinforced. Everything we're told is 180 degrees from the truth. This is the worst man alive. He's the merchant of death. He's a stone cold killer, psycho.
Yeah.
And I heard an interview with him with some Russian newscaster.
Can you send that to me? I looked for it. I don't know which one it is. If you still have it, do you have it?
I will. But he spoke in English with her, and he just
posted it, actually.
Victor Bout interview.
I saw one, and he was speaking Russian. That's the only one I could find.
Well, this one, interview with Victor Bout.
No, he did one in English, and I can't find it. Somebody sent it to me, and it's I didn't get to it quick enough, and I was swept away. But he was speaking English. I saw it. Very good English, too.
Yeah. Well.
So tell our friends what he said, basically.
Okay, I found one, but he's in Russian. But he spoke in English for about 2 minutes. And he said, it's very sad to see America destroying itself with the woke culture and the transgender agenda that's being pushed. And he said, when I was in prison, I interacted with a lot of Americans. And he said, I got along with them. We're not enemies. I mean, they were very nice people, and we got along. And he said, to me, America was always that shining city on the hill. We looked up to America. It was a great country. And basically what he said is it's very sad to see it destroying himself, seeing it destroy itself.
79. I ran the story in print. I didn't get a chance to look at the video. It's a short video.
If I could spend an evening with Victor Bout or the guy that's pretending to be Grimes, I'd rather spend an evening talking to Victor Bout, intelligent guy. And well, he did. I mean, he had a cleanup crew, and he would go to battle zones where there would be battles, and his crew would go in and sweep up all the weapons, and he would take them and resell them and refurbish them. So he was an arms dealer, but somebody's got to do it. But you know, Russians are not our enemies. They're just not.
I ran a video. I sent it to you, I think. I hope I did. Of a Russian supermarket.
Yes.
With the Russian shoppers in it.
Tucker Carlson did another one where there was a guy traveling, and he went in and he said, well, I was worried to go in there. I was worried to go to Russia because of all the sanctions and everything's so expensive and the shelves are empty because of our sanctions. He goes in the store and he goes, this is better than the Whole Foods in, wherever he came from in California. And he went and he bought all this food for like $7, and it was all fresh and beautiful, artesian bread and milk and ground beef for $1.75 a pound, and not that you and I are going to eat that, but we're just being lied to constantly. Oh, don't you wish Jim Mars was still alive with the JFK stuff coming out?
He'd be Tucker came very, out and very said interesting it. To hear.
Tucker Carlson said he talked to someone who saw the report who said, clear as day, the CIA helped kill Kennedy, and that's why they're not releasing the files. And he said, your whole country is a lie. Everything is a lie. And so Tucker called the CIA for comment, and they said that was illegal for him to have discussed that. Stop it. So, yeah, Jim Mars was right.
He studied the assassination for 53 years.
Yeah.
And Jimmy didn't miss much. He didn't miss anything. He got it.
He was an encyclopedia. He could remember names and dates and events and not just the key players. I mean, like, ancillary, the supporting cast. He had it all.
Correct.
And he talked to them all personally. You know, he didn't just go on the internet. I mean, he did most of his research before there was an internet. He went and talked to the people. I got to we should all go reread all his books. I haven't read Crossfire.
He was such a wonderful, brilliant man. So is Tex Mars.
Sweetheart.
And they weren't related, just so any of you thinking they were related. Yeah. No, they weren't. But now Jim and I, well, you used to hear that. We had such fun on the programs.
Oh, yeah.
I used to play Name That Tune with him.
Yep.
People don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but Jimmy would always. He loved his beer, all right. And before every program, he'd always.
He called me drunk a couple of times. I'd see my phone, and it would say Plano, Texas. And I'd go, oh, my God, Jim Mars is calling me, you know, and I'd go, geez, what time is it in Plano, Texas? It must be, late. And he'd go, hey, Dick. And I'd have great conversations with Jim. So I know he'd have the Heineken, so I'd grab a glass of wine.
I'd give anything to have that phone ring again with him on there. He used to call a lot.
And what a loss. Well, we're coming to a time, and this was told to me by my new mentor, and he told me several years ago.
Is this the mentor I know you're talking about?
Yeah, He said, we're coming to a time when everything is going to be revealed. Things that will shock you to your core are going to come out because it's all got to go down. You've got to lose faith in everything. And I think this is the year that it's really going to start picking up. The problem is the mind control is so sophisticated and entrenched that the sheep won't, it can be laid out right in front of them and they won't listen or.
No.
But a lot of this stuff is going to come out. You're going to hear stuff about medicine, royalty, the CIA, the FBI.
Right.
Politicians being crooked, it's all going to come out, and it's going to be very traumatic.
Well, I think it's already being presented. We all know the system is hopelessly criminal, hopelessly corrupted, hopelessly controlled. We don't have a government. We were overthrown quite blatantly when they killed Kennedy. But even more so now with the 2020 election fraud. We know this. Our vote means nothing on a national basis anymore. Yeah. We have been overthrown. This is not a government of, by, and for the American people at all. Period. Done.
Better news. Let's go out on a happy subject. 1959.
I got to play something, too.
Well, get that ready. 1959, 1960, we have a 7-year-old, 8-year-old Dickie Allgaier in Birmingham, Michigan, which was a suburb of Detroit. My dad worked in like admin that, he had the little tie and the dark suit and the hair, brilliant, whatever hair stuff. What do they call that? Vitalis.
Real cream. Vitalis. Real cream. Yeah.
My mom stayed at home in a dress and kissed him goodbye and took care of us and made us lunch. But my mom's birthday was the 17th of November. So, 17th of December. So that was the kickoff of the Christmas season for the Allgaier family. And the weekend before that, if it fell on a weekend, we'd go there. But around about that time, we would go Christmas tree shopping. Like, come on, Dickie, we're going to go find a Christmas tree. And we'd get in the car, which was like a 1959 Oldsmobile or so, maybe a 55.
Nice.
It was old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had a little Volkswagen for my mom. But we'd go to the Christmas tree lot, and there'd be this lot with all these Christmas trees. And when you're a little kid, it was so cool because there's all these trees in rows, and we'd run up. I'd run up and down, and we'd pick a tree and go, this is a good one. And my dad would pay for it, and they'd tie it to the top of the car, bring it home. And on my mom's birthday, the 17th, we'd have a birthday party for her, and then we'd my dad would go up in the attic or out in the garage and get the Christmas decorations. And we had certain ornaments that were passed down through the family, and he had the lights.
Right. Yeah.
And he put the lights through the tree, and we'd put the tree in the little thing, the little stand, put some water on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd trim the tree, and we'd hang the tinsel on it, and we'd spend the evening lighting the Christmas tree. And then the house for that whole time smelled like pine. And then pretty soon presents would start appearing, like, oh, like, don't shake the present, Dickie, don't look. And we'd go to sleep. They would always let us, because we were so excited, open one present on Christmas Eve. So we'd have a Christmas party, and we would have, like, hot apple cider, non-alcoholic, but, like, mm-hmm. with cloves and cinnamon. And they would we would burn candles that were spice candles, that smell mm-hmm. of candle wax with spice mm-hmm. candles in the Christmas mm-hmm. tree. And it would get dark early, and it would be cold, and we'd in Salt Lake City, we put a log on the fire and have a warm fire popping and open a present and then go to sleep. And before we went to sleep, we put stockings out, a big stocking. Like, I would have one that a wool sock that would come up to my knee. And we'd lay out the stockings and go to sleep. And we'd wake up. My dad woke us up every morning, like 6 a.m. or 6:30 a.m., he'd go, ho, 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 ho. We'd hear that ho, 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 and we'd go, oh, it's Christmas. And we'd all run up or run down and come around the tree. And my mom would have to, like, get up and make the coffee. We can't open the presents yet, but you got to open your stocking. And they would always put a Mad magazine in my stocking to keep me occupied for a while. So I would... Did you ever read Mad Magazine?
Sure.
Yeah, it was great. So, 1960s. And you'd get your little presents in the stockings. And then my dad would come down, and they'd have their coffee and have a pastry or something and pass out the presents and open presents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just such a family thing.
Yeah. We have to play our song here.
Oh, this is the Hawaiian Christmas song. Mele Kaliki Maka.
Play it. You ready?
Yeah. This is Bing Crosby. Bing Crosby.
Mele Kaliki Maka is a thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway. Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Mele Kaliki Maka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you.
Mele Kaliki Maka is the thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day.
That's the Andrews sisters?
That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway. Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikalikimaka is Hawaii's way to say Merry Christmas to you.
That's a very nice song.
Yeah.
Here,
Jeff,
here's the rest
you
of it.
And I, you and I got to live in the best time, in the best place in the history of this civilization. And it's gone. He got
right.
to live through it.
Yeah. You're 100%
right. And a Christmas show with a downer, but we were lucky to experience that. We really were.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
Melikalikimaka is the thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway.
Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright,
the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas.
A very Merry Christmas.
A very, 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 very Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you for sharing that. That was nice.
I will send you my version. I played ukulele and I sing it. I can't sing like Bing Crosby. He's a crooner. That's his voice is so
yeah.
smooth.
I know.
And you know, they just yes. don't. There's no
nope.
auto tune. There's
nope.
no. That's really nope. his voice.
They really sounded like that. That's what they sounded like. That's who they
yeah.
were. No, no tricks. It's all tricks now. It's just product. That's all.
Yep.
That was very nice. That's song is nice. Nice melody.
Yeah. Happy. Well, everybody, have a Merry Christmas and be nice to your family and be nice to everybody. It's getting harder and harder, but try to be nice and love your family. Don't talk about politics and finances and injections with your family. Just be nice to them because they're trying to get us to fight. Don't do it. Be nice.
No, don't do it. Kindness. Kindness.
Kindness.